Here at the Transition to a Bioeconomy conference, we have a session that's going to talk about infrastructure. And here with me in this interview, I have Thomas Doerr, who is our USDA Rural Development Secretary. And I guess in talking about rural policy and what that means in the 21st century with infrastructure, what are some of the thoughts that you want to share here with this group?
Well, before I start, Chuck, it's good to see you again, and I just have to comment to your listeners that anybody who has not seen Chuck Zimmerman's golden microphone, they ought to get a look at it. It's terrific.
It's got put to good use yesterday, too.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, rural policy for the 21st century, I think, is really an appropriate question, and it's really appropriate now as we come off the backside of the 2008 Farm Bill. And, you know, over the last 20 years, and particularly the last 15 years, there have been a lot of things, and you and I have talked about them, that have occurred that have had impacts on rural, but not as directly as recently. The deployment of broadband makes it easier to do things. I mean, you can have access to process control, so you can build ethanol plants, or you can build wind farms and do things in rural America, and that's higher value things that you can create good value jobs out of. But secondly, the demand for energy and the demand for food have substantively altered because of the internet how we can also process and handle these things. And so what I think we saw in the 2008 Farm Bill was, although it was vestiges of the traditional Farm Bill approaches, interestingly enough, Title I lost money. I mean, Title I was not, I mean, it was it consumed the discussion. But when the dust settled, Title I was not near as big a player. Although we didn't get the reform we want, it still didn't get the money. There was a lot of focus on conservation, clearly a lot of focus on nutrition programs and dealing with especially crops. But then above and beyond that, renewable energy and rural development actually, in many respects, fared as well as anything. And I think what you're seeing constructively is a shift in ag policy to rural policy. Now, obviously, I'm the rural development guy, so people are going to say, well, yeah, that's what he wants. But I think it's interesting if you look at it in the context of where we're at in conservation, where we are at in renewable energy, where we are at in infrastructure development, broadband deployment, where people are beginning to think about in different ways, it's clear that this shift has taken place. And I think this is an appropriate dialogue, and I think it's going to continue and pick up a lot of speed over the next several months. My understanding is that the House Ag Committee wants to talk about some more expansive things in the context of reorganizing the department and doing other things. I think those discussions are appropriate, and I think it's healthy.
Well, this part of this series of conferences that they're holding on this topic has focused largely on biofuels. And yesterday we had Tony Crooks, I think, was with us from your department. And when you look at our rural communities, I heard a lot of people here talk about what some of the new biorefineries can mean to rural communities. And I heard kind of a mix of comments, that it was good, but then only up to a point. And I'm not sure I fully understood what happened after you reached that point. But how would you describe what this has meant to date with the rapid expansion of some of these ethanol plants and biodiesel plants that are out there?
Well, it's pretty clear that 95% of all rural income is off-farm income. Those are numbers that we know consistently. We haven't created any new farm jobs for years. So any new economic activity that occurs in rural areas is going to occur as a result of some sort of value added or some sort of unique and better and higher value use of the natural resource, whether it's wind or whether it's sun or whether it's the corn and the soybeans and the wheat and all the other biomass products that we produce. But when you do that, when you create these higher value jobs all at once, you're going to create some other challenges. First of all, if you get people moving back into communities that have historically had out-migration, guess what? You've got to deal with infrastructure issues, things as basic and mundane as water and sewer systems. If you haven't had the revenue, you haven't built them up, now you got to replace them. Interestingly enough, when you put up an ethanol plant outside your town, your local volunteer fire department, who are great guys, frequently don't have the training, don't have the equipment, don't have the background to fight an industrial-grade explosion outside their community. Those are financial challenges and infrastructure challenges that have to happen and have to be dealt with. And yet, by the same token, if we're willing to do that, step up and look at the public policy issues, look at the regulatory issues, and look at these advantages, the simplest way, and you've heard me say this, you know, if we displace 1 billion barrels of imported crude oil, that's the same as $130 billion. That's 1.5 times net farm income. That attracts significant economic activity and new jobs. That means people, kids and grandkids can come back. And so now all at once you got to deal with the issue of, well, you got different traffic patterns and you've got different expectations and you've got the need for recreation centers and you've got just a whole host of things. I think collectively rural America, traditional agriculture rural America, has to sit down and say, we wanted increased activity. We wanted increased economic opportunity. We're getting it. Are we prepared now to step up and do the other things that those really successful communities have done? And that's the big picture issue, and that's what we have to start doing. And I think some communities and some regions will do it well. Others will have difficulty with it. And I think the best thing we can do is try to engage some of the traditional providers. I think, for example, the land grant system ought to start looking at doing more research in non-traditional areas, like what are the best business models? What are the best kinds of investment tools? What are the regulatory issues we have to deal with? You know, they probably don't like it when I say this, but most of the molecular breeding and a lot of the basic science work that the land grant system used to do is now being done by the private sector. Now, it certainly doesn't mean that that excludes us from it, but there's a whole host of other evolutionary issues that need to be addressed that people aren't addressing. And there are resources out there to do it, and we ought to expect them to step up and fill that need.
Well, I don't know what kind of involvement you've had with Farm Foundation and their conferences, but when you look at this type of an event, what are your thoughts in terms of what they're trying to accomplish here?
Well, I've had a long history of involvement with the Farm Foundation. I was a member of the Roundtable for many years before I actually became the Undersecretary, when you have to sever these relationships. They have graciously invited me back a number of times to speak on biofuels and other rural development issues. They have been very helpful in sponsoring rural development opportunity tours, of which we've done 2 in a row. We're doing a third one this summer, actually taking a group of agribusiness and development, rural development leaders to Europe to start the first time ever a grassroots farmer-to-farmer dialogue. We're going the first week, the Sunday right after the 4th of July. We're taking leaders, four Farm Bureau presidents. Tom Bias, the president of the Farmers Union, is going. Nancy Pellett, the former chairman of the Farm Credit Administration. I think Rick Tolman and one of his members are going. We've got someone from the Soybean Association going. We've got people from the Cotton Plants Group. We've got Matt Chase from NATO. Colleen Landemacher from NACO is going. And what we're going to do is sit down with the European Union Director Generals for a day, discuss a number of issues. Then we're actually going to go out and meet with some German and some French farmers. The intent is to get our producers much more heavily engaged, particularly as we're embarking on these new opportunities around energy. The issue of sustainability, for example, is coming up greatly. I'm very concerned that it could become the next code word for GMO. And I think what we have to do is to get in front of this in a way in which we begin getting producers to communicate with one another, to share ideas, to share insights, so that in the final analysis, we don't let all of the decisions be driven by policymakers who, frankly, may be driven by NGO interests that are dissimilar from what's best for the public sector and what's best for their producers. Farm Foundation has been very heavily involved in these issues, and they have stepped up on a regular basis and to conduct a series of these sorts of outreach meetings where you bring people together to sit down. You know, this isn't real glamorous stuff in a lot of respects. You get policymakers into a room, they sit down, they start working through this, but this is the way you lay the basis for what hopefully becomes a better policy 2 years out, 3 years out, et cetera.
Well, it's nice to see you again here, and appreciate taking a few minutes to talk with us at the Transition to a Bioeconomy. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.